This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day to look at the truth about the most influential and the most bloody conflict in all of human history, World War II. A special broadcast, especially at a time when we are losing so many members of the greatest generation who fought for our freedom and fought to save the world in World War II. A terribly appropriate time to remember the real lessons of that conflict and to clear away some of the lies, some of the mistakes, and some of the myths about World War II in this very special broadcast. And one of those myths involves the idea that the first stages of the war were cheap and easy for the Germans. They were not. The Germans initiated a new style of warfare called Blitzkrieg, lightning war, which meant a coordinated attack by tanks, a kind of a strategy that had been devised by a brilliant German general named Heinz Guderian, who actually wrote a book in 1937 that didn't get enough study in the West. It was a book called Achtung Panzer, meaning Attention Panther. And the Panther divisions that he helped to put together, involving some of the best tanks in the world, absolutely carried the day against the Poles, but not before more than 10,000 Germans gave up their lives in 1 month of struggle. And at this point, I mean, for the West, what had happened was that they were prepared not to fight a new style war, as the Germans were accommodating themselves to, but to fight a repeat of World War I. The French in particular had spent a fortune in the interwar years, not only building up the world's largest army, some 5 million Frenchmen under arms, but building some pretty good air resources that they built at the very end, right before the war and right before they were attacked, and building the Maginot Line. The Maginot Line was a long line of defense all against Germany with all kinds of concrete and big guns and underground fortresses that the French would use to defend themselves if the Germans attacked the way they had before. There's one problem with the Maginot Line. Because of the cost and because of political problems with Holland and Belgium, it was never finished. If you look at a map, if you want to keep Germany out of France, you have to keep Germany out of Holland and Belgium. And the Maginot Line never went into Holland and Belgium, because the Belgians and the Dutch weren't eager for it to do so, because they at least technically wanted to remain neutral. So it created an easy situation for the Germans to just follow if they were going to attack France, as clearly everyone expected them to do. It created an easy situation for them to just go through Holland and Belgium as they had before, which is why the French put most of their troops and most of the British troops who were helping them up there in that region to block that expected German attack, which would have been a repeat of the attack that they actually used in World War I. There was only one problem. The Germans, in particular General Guderian, were not eager to go along with the French expectations. And that brings us to one of the many, many myths about World War II. And this is one that's kind of painful for me to admit, because like a lot of other people, I do like to make fun of the French and their role in World War II. And the general understanding, the general myth is, oh, the French just surrendered, they turned tail and ran, they didn't fight, they just gave in to the Germans. It's not true. The fall of France was a tragedy, and it occurred just about as quickly as the fall of Poland, despite the fact that the French had this enormous army and this enormous string of fortresses. The French had some of the worst generals in the history of the human race commanding their phenomenal army in 1940, when Hitler invaded in June of 1940. But what they also had, in addition to phenomenally incompetent generals, was some very determined fighting men. This idea that the French just turned and ran, listen to this summary by a respected historian of some of the French performance. 7 French divisions fought gallantly against twice their numbers of fresh troops, inflicting heavy losses. and maintained high morale despite mounting odds. Their demeanor, skill, and appetite for the fight could not have been more different from that of some of the earlier battles on the Somme. Throughout June 9th and June 10th, the Germans made little progress and were admiring of the quality of the French soldiers in their diaries and dispatches. Then, inevitably, 7 Corps Stand collapsed. It collapsed partially because the French Air Force never got into the air. Now, the French had some really first-rate planes. Technically, the new plane that they were building at the amazing rate of 1 an hour was supposed to be a match for the Messerschmitt 109. But they unfortunately didn't have the pilots to fly it, and France, during the battle for France, has to be the only nation in history that had more planes at the end of this battle that they lost than they had at the beginning. They just didn't get their planes in the air, and they gave almost complete control of the skies to the Germans. And one of the other demonstrations that the French were not cowardly, that they did know how to fight, is at the very end of the one-month struggle for French survival and French independence. The Italians, Hitler's feckless allies, Mussolini had dreams of building a new Roman Empire, and he had been the dictator of Italy since 1922. He had been there for a long time. And you cannot blame Mussolini on the Treaty of Versailles because, of course, Italy had gained from the Treaty of Versailles. They were on the winning side. But Mussolini had arranged with Hitler that he came in and did what Roosevelt later called the stab in the back. And while the Germans were attacking in the north, the Italians tried to attack in the south. And they outnumbered the French by about 3-1. But the French, I mean, absolutely decimated the Army of the Alps. The French Army of the Alps fought like tigers, and they beat back the Italians, who were slaughtered. The French performed heroically against the Italians. Now, none of it was to any avail, because what happened is General Guderian basically sent his armored divisions right through where they were not supposed to go at all. Nobody thought they could go through the Ardennes forest, but they did. And they did so at a very, very rapid clip. As a matter of fact, Hitler gave Guderian the order to slow down because he was afraid that he was moving so quickly that he could be attacked on the flanks by the British and the French. Guderian saw that they were in no shape to do that. They were huddled around the Maginot Line. So he asked the Führer's permission to just send a scouting party out ahead, and then he raced on ahead anyway and basically helped to cut off the British. The British managed to get out at Dunkirk. People know, I think, a little bit about that, where they used literally a fleet of shipping boats and any available craft to move the English across the channel rather than having the entire British army being captured by the Germans. As it was, there were at least 750,000 French who were taken immediately prisoner of war. Ultimately, there were 2 million French soldiers who were taken as prisoner of war. But part of the proof that it is a myth that the French just didn't fight is that in this first stage of the war, the French lost 94,000 killed in action. Now think about that. About a month of fighting before Hitler comes into Paris, 94,000 killed in action, with 250,000 seriously wounded, 2 million taken prisoner of war. It was a horrible disaster, but it wasn't due to cowardice. It was due to spectacular incompetence by the French and by the British government that was just in the process of folding, the old government of Neville Chamberlain, soon to be replaced by a much more effective government, led, of course, by Winston Churchill. Meanwhile, people assumed that Franklin Roosevelt was watching all of these events and trying to rally Americans. Well, right after the war began, and right after Hitler invaded Poland, Franklin Roosevelt delivered one of his famous fireside chats, and he said this to the American people. "I have said not once but many times that I have seen war and that I hate war. I say that again and again. I hope the United States will keep out of this war. I believe that it will. And I give you assurance and reassurance that every effort of your government will be directed toward that end. As long as it remains within my power to prevent, there will be no blackout of peace in the United States." And then, while France was being slaughtered and occupied by the Germans, Roosevelt was running for a third term. And on October 30th, months after the French had fallen, Roosevelt said in Boston, "Mothers and fathers, I have said this before, but I shall say it again and again and again. Your boys are not going to be sent into any foreign wars." So how did it happen that they were? We'll get to that. If you think Washington State's headed in the right direction, well, then this message is not for you. But if you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. It's led the effort against state and local income taxes, and its research and policy analysis are relied on by lawmakers, media, and citizen activists for accuracy, fresh perspective, and to expose the political manipulation of data. Washington State is our home, and it needs WPC more than ever. Get off the sidelines, become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org.
Now's the time to join the millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. MyPillow is now offering a BOGO extravaganza on multiple MyPillow products. Right now, get buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillows, six-piece towel sets, and roll and go anywhere MyPillows, and yes, so much more. Just go to the Radio Listeners Specials page at MyPillow.com and use the promo code MEDVED. That's MyPillow.com, promo code MEDVED, or call 1-800-320-6280. That's 800-320-6280. Don't miss this incredible BOGO extravaganza at MyPillow.com. Buy one, get one free on select products. Remember, that's promo code MEDVED or 1-800-320-6280.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy, your football buddy, or you, your best man, your worst man, you, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm about to give you a URL that can and will change your life. You will simply investigate it and look into it for your own self. Do your own research. This is an absolute 360 win for GCN, for American Tax Solutions, and for you. Ladies and gentlemen, these are top tax lawyers that will deliver you super service very, very quickly and change your life. The average person can save up to 90% on their taxes. Visit GCNTaxCut.com. That's GCNTaxCut.com.
Music by film composer Ron Goodwin for the 1969 film The Battle of Britain. very appropriate for our special broadcast on the Michael Medved Show about World War II, myths, mistakes, and lies. And concerning the Battle of Britain, not a lot of myths. You couldn't make myths that could equal the true fateful heroism that was displayed by the Royal Air Force in the Battle of Britain. Everybody knows about Churchill's inspiring words. But so many other aspects of World War II have been misrepresented and misunderstood, including the fall of France, where generally people assume that the French just rolled over and played dead. Actually, they didn't play dead. Many of them were dead. 94,000 killed in action. Total French deaths in World War II were 600,000. More Frenchmen died than Brits or Americans. Despite the fact that Britain and America, of course, have much larger populations, had much larger populations at the time than France did, France lost horribly in the war, with some 1.6 million Frenchmen who were used as slave laborers by Hitler, and many of whom died in Germany. Many French civilians died in the fighting back and forth. The problem was the leadership of the French, and the fact that a new government came into power, led by Marshal Pétain, who had been one of the heroes of World War I, and that was a government that was absolutely determined to cooperate with the Nazis, not to make war, to end the war, to actually help them. And what was ironic about this was that there were Frenchmen who wanted to fight on. There were people like General de Gaulle, who was a brigadier general, a low-ranking general, and he had escaped with some French forces, and Churchill urged Pétain. He said, look, you have an empire. The French owned big chunks of Africa, big chunks of Asia. They owned islands in the Western Hemisphere. They could have raised troops from the empire. They had the fourth largest navy in the world, which had largely been untouched. There was an attempt by the Italians to go after the French navy. The Italians failed at almost everything in World War II. They really did very poorly and also lost hundreds of thousands of men. Churchill tried to get the French to rally and to continue the struggle and to establish a government in exile, but they didn't do that. Instead, they established a government at Vichy, a small town. They couldn't do it in Paris because the Germans were using Paris for their occupation headquarters, and they were the real rulers of France. By the middle of the war, 1943, 40% of all French economic output, industrial and agricultural, was being used to feed the German war machine, was being taken away from France and into Germany to feed the ongoing struggle. So France suffered horribly in the war, did not get out lightly at all. And when you talk about that ongoing struggle that needed to be constantly fed by steel from Sweden, by every kind of industrial and agricultural product from France, from all around the world, from oil, from Romania, the reason the Germans needed that kind of input, that they needed that kind of fuel for their war machine, the main reason was they're undertaking the war to the east. There's an old saying in German life, Drang nach dem Osten, you want to head toward the east. Hitler had made it very clear in his book, My Struggle, Mein Kampf, that he wrote while he was in prison in 1923, that his real goal as leader of Germany would not be conquering Britain and France and America. His real goal would be conquering Russia. He considered the Slavs, the Russians and the Poles and the other peoples of Eastern Europe to be mud people, to be subhumans. And there was this whole desire for German Lebensraum. And people who watched the situation, including Winston Churchill, who was now the leader of Great Britain, knew it was only a matter of time before Hitler and Stalin fell out of cooperation. There had never been much love between them. But Stalin, amazingly enough, kept all his promises to Hitler because he was, frankly, very impressed by German success. One of the reasons that the Germans ended up striking out against Russia in one of the most fateful decisions of the war and launching Operation Barbarossa, named after an old Holy Roman Emperor from the 12th century who had helped to unify Germans, as Hitler intended to do, Operation Barbarossa was launched against the Russians. It was a surprise attack. It caught Stalin by surprise. It shouldn't have. There were all kinds of intelligence reports that came to Stalin, just like there were intelligence reports coming to Roosevelt about the likelihood of Pearl Harbor, and Stalin discounted them. He didn't believe it. And Hitler had the element of surprise and the success of the Germans in the first stage of that invasion of Russia. The extent of German success was quite extraordinary and remarkable. But one of the reasons that Hitler had launched that attack is because in the so-called phony war period, that period after the war began, but before there was serious fighting against Britain and France, where there was 6 months of waiting, where the British and French, rather than taking the war to the Germans, as they might have done, were waiting behind the Maginot Line for a German attack. Well, during that time period, Russia planned to capture the Karelian Peninsula of Finland and to subjugate Finland. And the Russians were just battered by the Finns. The Finns fought heroically and spectacularly well against these vastly more numerous Russians, and Hitler paid close attention. And he reached the conclusion that the mighty Red Army was actually a paper tiger, that Russia was seething with discontent. Stalin had massacred most of his officer corps. He was paranoid. In the Great Terror, as it was called, his purges of the 1930s, he had killed the majority of his senior officers. Not for any treason, but just because he was fearful of anyone who wasn't totally dependent upon him. The idea of Stalin working with strong generals who would maintain some kind of independent judgment, like General Guderian or General Rommel, who worked with Hitler, Stalin never would have done that. Or, of course, like any of the generals who worked with Churchill or Roosevelt. Now, this brings us to the next myth that needs to be debunked. The myth of the heroic Soviet Union, our gallant allies, well, more and more people who know anything about the war, know that, if anything, the Soviet Union and the way that Stalin conducted the war was more shameful, was more disgusting, certainly cost more people than the way that Hitler conducted the war. One of the worst things that Stalin did was issuing General Order in August, right after Russia was invaded, General Order 5811B. And what that said is, you're not allowed to surrender. Now, what does that mean? It means that any Russian who attempts to surrender will face the death penalty. And that means that if you surrender to the Germans, if you're a prisoner of war and you come back to Russia or you're even rescued, you go right into Russian military prisons, or you're killed. In some of the key fights, the Russians actually set up two lines of men, where they would have people on the front lines, and then there would be Russians behind them with guns. So if the people on the front lines were supposed to turn around and run away, they would be shot, they would be killed. Stalin also used people deliberately, some of his key troops, to clear mines. He would say, okay, we're going to have people who are going to blow up mines and sacrifice themselves and die for the motherland. He also refused to use tanks together with his troops, a disastrous decision, used masses of troops, kept the tanks in reserve, he said, waiting for opportunities. Somehow, however, the Russians did manage to survive the German onslaught, and that involves another myth. Was it generalship or something else? We'll tell you in this special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show.
You're listening to a best of the Michael Medved Show. For complete show archives, go to michaelmedved.com and consider becoming a Medhead. Use the promo code SPRING40 for some special discounts. When you become a premium subscriber, you get access to hundreds of Michael's commentaries, movie reviews, exclusive podcasts, and of course our commercial-free radio show going back years and years. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on the...
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg. President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden are taking part in a number of ceremonies to honor Memorial Day. The President and First Lady at Arlington National Cemetery participating in a wreath-laying ceremony at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Memorial Day ceremonies taking place all across the nation at the USS Intrepid Museum Memorial Day ceremony. Navy veteran Richard Mills says schools should be teaching the history of what servicemen went through.
I spent 2 years on the Intrepid from 1960 in April to 1962 May. Two of the best years of my life, but I look back on them.
The pain at the pump continues, AAA saying the nationwide average for the price of a gallon of regular up to $4.62 a gallon. USA Radio News.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. Patricia, excellent herbal formula. I use Extendivite to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Brian, I'm using Extendivite, and for me, it has made a world of difference. God made all these nutrients in the ground. Enough said. Cammy, 5 stars. I feel a lot of energy since I started taking Extendivite. TR, 5 stars. All I can say is, Extendivite works. Buy it, try it, and see for yourself. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's N-U-T-R-I Medical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
The song is called Meadowlands. On the special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, it's a particularly appropriate number for this particular moment in this broadcast because during the time that the Soviet Union was fighting against Nazi Germany, there was a brief popularity of the Soviet Union in the United States, and not just among American communists, though of course they fed it very dramatically. That song, Meadowlands, there sung by the Red Army Chorus, actually became a hit in America during the war because it represented our gallant Soviet ally. One of the myths, mistakes, and lies about World War II is that the Soviets were heroic and noble. Stalin called the war the Great Patriotic War, and even today in Russia they celebrate World War II as the Great Patriotic War. Now, of course, the Soviets made a huge contribution to victory. There's no question about that. The Germans, in terms of killed and wounded and missing and prisoners of war, lost a total of 13 million men in the war. Unbelievable, but it's true, including the wounded and the prisoners, etc. Of those 13 million, 10 million were lost fighting the Russians. The Russians, meanwhile, had 11 million battlefield deaths. Unprecedented. Phenomenal. But partially because of Stalin's incompetence, and the Great Patriotic War did not, in some kind of profound way, heal over all of the divisions and all of the pain that had been created by the communist government. One of the things that was very dramatic about the German advance onto Moscow was there were parts of the Soviet Union where the Germans were greeted as liberators, particularly in the Ukraine. And as a matter of fact, if the Germans hadn't been so harsh and so cruel
on some of the people that they were occupying. If they had cooperated with them more, they probably could have gotten even more cooperation than they did. But as it was, there was a phenomenon known as Vlasov's men, which Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the Nobel Prize winner and historian and novelist, writes about. Vlasov's men were some 500,000 to 800,000 Russian troops who ended up fighting for the Nazis. The kind of thing you don't hear about in history books that tend to glorify the old Soviet Union. What happened was this, is people would be taken prisoner of war, including one of Stalin's best generals, whose name was Alexeyevich Vlasov. He was incredibly, incredibly angry with Stalin because Stalin had ordered him not to retreat when he needed to retreat to save his men, and he ended up being captured by the Germans. Stalin preferred for his generals to commit suicide rather than being captured. But when Vlasov was captured by the Germans, he actually went to them and said, you know, it might be a good idea if I raised a few people and we fought to liberate Russia. And so was born the Russian Liberation Army. Now, they talked about that a lot, but it was only at the very end of the war that the Nazis allowed the Russians to form in regiments and groups and armies of their own. For the most part, they insisted that they wear German uniforms and fight for Germany, which was, of course, hard for people. But if you were a prisoner of war, and you were a Russian prisoner of war, and you weren't supported at all by your own government, this is one of the betrayals that Solzhenitsyn talks about. Most other prisoners of war all over the world had their government send them food to make sure that they were fed. America fed our prisoners and made sure our prisoners were reasonably cared for. By German lines, the Japanese prisoners were more maltreated. My father-in-law, the late Major Stan Edwards of the U.S. Army, was sent as an officer at a POW camp for Italian prisoners of war in Alaska. Obviously, somebody at the Pentagon had a little bit of a sense of humor to take Italian prisoners of war and put them in Alaska. But leaving that aside, the Russian prisoners were starving, they were abused, they were horrible. And then the Nazis and General Vlasov and some of the folks would come to them and say, hey, you have a chance to get out of this miserable prisoner of war camp. You'll be well fed, you'll get good food. All you have to do is fight for the Führer. And so some 500,000 to 800,000 people did and contributed to the huge German army of some 3 million people that ended up invading Russia and fighting against the Russians. Now, of course, the worst possible outcome for some of Vlasov's men would be being taken prisoner of war by the Russians. They knew they had to fight to the death, and they fought more effectively even the rest of the Germans. Toward the end of the war, when they had separate units, some of Vlasov's men ended up saving, turning against the Germans, their allies, and saving the city of Prague. The Germans, as they were retreating, were going to destroy Prague. So during the communist era, they always said, oh, the Russians saved Prague. But it wasn't the Russians, the communist Russians. It was Vlasov's men. General Vlasov was captured. He was executed, of course, along with literally millions of other Russians. More about the true story behind World War II coming up.
The Michael Medved Show. MichaelMedved.com.
This is Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for a town hall. A star-studded but loathsome new Netflix film goes to extremes in its message that Christianity is a dangerous, demented cult. Nearly all characters in The Devil All the Time profess fervent evangelical faith that leads them to murder, torture, child molestation, animal crucifixion, and other horrors. One preacher, played by Robert Pattinson, seduces young girls by demanding they display themselves as God made you, while his pulpit predecessor slaughters his wife and then tries to invoke his pastoral power to resurrect her. Based on a novel about the actual town of Knock'em Stiff, Ohio, the film features European actors with exaggerated drawls, caricaturing hillbilly primitives Hollywood identifies with rural middle America. In its gruesome assault on a faith that actually uplifts tens of millions in every corner of the country, this misbegotten film highlights vast gaps between coastal creative elites and real denizens of the heartland. I'm Michael Medved. a special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show about World War II, so often misunderstood and misrepresented. World War II, myths, mistakes, and lies. We haven't spoken yet about some of the myths concerning America's war against Japan. The war that began, of course, on December 7th, 1941, with the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. There is a general belief that this was the inevitable result of Japanese militarism, that there was nothing that could possibly be done to stop the war, that it was cast in stone because the Japanese were so crazy and so mean. The Japanese were incredibly mean and incredibly vicious, particularly when fighting their Chinese adversaries. They killed some 250,000 civilians, at least, in a six-week orgy of violence in the rape of Nanking. The Japanese tormented prisoners. They were incredibly cruel, more cruel even than the Russians or the Germans, you could say, on a person-to-person basis during World War II. However, the idea that war was inevitable was simply a myth. The basis for the war and America's involvement in war against Japan was found in Japan's geography. Here you have this remarkable civilization and this remarkable people living on a little scattering of islands with no natural resources. They have to import absolutely everything. Rubber, metals, iron ore, oil, most importantly, even wood had to be imported to Japan. And their big export, 38% of their population was involved in textiles. They made all kinds of fabrics and silks and sold that abroad. I mean, it's a very, very unlikely world power, especially given the fact that Japan had been so isolated from the rest of the world for literally hundreds of years, from about the 1500s until it was opened up by Commodore Perry, an American, in 1854. But between 1854 and the next 50 years and 1905, when they won this amazing victory against Russia, which was a world power, and who, Japan? Japan was supposed to be a quaint place where people ran around in kimonos and lived behind rice screens and sipped tea. And here they beat the Tsarist Empire, and they beat the Tsarist Empire quickly and decisively. Suddenly Japan became a world power. It fought on the side of the Allies, particularly because of a long-standing alliance with Great Britain in World War I. And Japan came out of World War I as one of the rising powers in the world. It was the land of the rising sun, rising economically, rising culturally, rising particularly militarily.
This is a special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, a best of. Lots more coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Spring and summer, worth celebrating, don't you think? Particularly in the Northwest, but anywhere across the country. And something else worth celebrating, emerging from the pandemic and all the restrictions associated with it. So you're going to be more active. Why not be more ready for all of that activity with Relief Factor? This is a dietary supplement. It is totally natural. I wouldn't be without it. I take it every day. It's gotten me through the hard days of winter and pandemic and more, and helps you feel better, whether it's aches and pains or Relief Factor can help. It's made from natural products, including turmeric and fish oil that is all blended together in a proprietary blend that actually works for people around the world. It's a great product. You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. Go to michaelmedved.com and just click on the banner for Relief Factor. Don't you get tired of commercials screaming at you to buy gold right now with inflated promises on future values? In an unregulated industry, you need honest, real experts to give you solid advice to protect your wealth and give you top picks, too, on the best coins and bullion based on real-time data and historical trends. For example, as environmental policy becomes a hot topic, one precious metal that's been significantly undervalued for years is potentially set to surge. Nick Grovich, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, has long recommended this precious metal. Up to 600,000 ounces of this rare metal will be needed by 2030 to produce green hydrogen. Nick is doubling down on this pick, and you should, too. Call Nick to find out more. Now, I've been friends with Nick for several years, and he's my go-to guy when it comes to coins and bullion. I trust him. You can, too. Call Nick at 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com. 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Americans have the most colorful language in the world. And that vibrant language is our basis for thinking in big ways, new ways, efficient ways, and better ways. Americans have freedom of speech. The pairing of our colorful language and freedom of speech has made us the people and the nation that we are today. Imagine what it would be like not having the freedom to speak our minds, communicate our thoughts and ideas, and hear those from others. Americans have a passion for and yearn for the truth. There are those who want to destroy our freedom and right to hear the truth. The truth is under attack. GCN is under attack. I'm asking our fellow broadcasters and you to rise up and help us defend our right to free speech. Would you like to join us? Please consider visiting SaveGCN.com. Please help us bring you the truth 24 hours per day. I'm Vincent Finelli.
Out of World War I is one of the rising powers in the world. It was the land of the rising sun, rising economically, rising culturally, rising particularly militarily. They spent a great deal of money building up their navy, and they naturally saw themselves as the leaders and the dominating force in Asia. There were many reasons that they wanted to conquer territory in Asia, particularly in China, first in Manchuria, which they invaded in 1931. Long before, 10 years before Pearl Harbor. One of the reasons was that they needed material. They needed resources, and there were plenty of resources there that they could use. Also resources in Indochina that they coveted, in the Dutch East Indies, and throughout Asia. They created the East Asia Co-Prosperity Sphere, which was basically going to be this new Japanese empire, where they saw themselves as the leaders, the dominating force among Asian peoples, who would finally, draw equal to and maybe ultimately superior to the Europeans who had exploited Asia and insulted Asia so much for so many years. And speaking of insults, one of the reasons that Japan needed Manchuria was Japan had a population of some 70 million. They had a lot of excess population, but there was only one place in the world that was at the time accepting Japanese immigrants, and that was in Manchuria. In most countries, they had banned Japanese immigrants, as we had in the United States, largely and sporadically, much to the insult of the Japanese people, partially because Japanese immigrants were so bright and hardworking and tended to do so well, and they had a culture that was considered to be very strange by the many places where they went. In any event, America's interest in the expansion of Japanese power was primarily based upon our sympathy for China. And that was based upon some 3,000 missionaries, Christian missionaries, who had met with some success in China and who were very involved in as advisors and sympathizers and even propagandists for the new Chinese Republic that replaced the old empire, the government of Sun Yat-sen and Chiang Kai-shek, and the beginnings of a modern China. We were very sympathetic to the Chinese. And so when the Japanese invaded Manchuria, which was run by a warlord, it wasn't really part of China. That was looked on as worrisome, but then Japan got involved in a full-scale war with China, where they won every single battle, but it ended up being the proverbial quagmire. The Chinese just relocated their capital, and it was such a huge area and so much to conquer, the Japanese never did manage to do it. But it was the war against China that necessitated the Japanese use of oil. Most of the oil they were getting, about 80% of it, was coming from the U.S., because at that time, the U.S. wasn't dependent on Middle Eastern oil. We were producing plenty of oil in Texas and elsewhere, and we would send a bunch of it to Japan. President Roosevelt, like most Americans, was not sympathetic to the Japanese, especially given the fact that the rape of Nanking, all of these atrocities, occurred in full view of the world with all kinds of reporters there. So we started embargoing Japan and going through all kinds of attempts to get them to pull back from China, to make peace with China. Instead of doing that, Japan got other sources of resources because, remember, in 1940, France fell. France had an empire in Indochina. They controlled Vietnam. They basically controlled Cambodia. With France being so weakened and fractionally conquered by the Nazis, the Japanese moved in there. Roosevelt was even more upset about that. And there was the idea that the other areas where Japan could get oil were particularly from the Dutch East Indies. They were also looking at British possessions because Britain was engaged with Nazi Germany. So the natural point for Japan was, okay, we either get our material from the United States, which was heavily invested in Japan, by the way. We had $466 million of investment in Japan. By far, most of our investment in Asia was in Japan. And in some senses, economically, it didn't make sense for us to go to war. Paul Johnson, the great British historian, in his History of the American People, suggests that if the negotiations had drawn on without precipitating Pearl Harbor for just a few months more, war could have been avoided with Japan. It wasn't inevitable at all. But what happened? What went wrong? We'll tell you in this special broadcast about myths concerning World War II.
Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for Town Hall. Angry protesters want to turn public sentiment against the police, but their ugly tactics remind all sane observers how much we need the cops. Rioting, looting, arson, Molotov cocktails, graffiti, and vandalism show how vulnerable all citizens would be without the courage of police officers who put their lives on the line every day. Sure, you can find examples of bad or poorly trained cops, but they're far more rare in police ranks than our violent criminal elements in the ranks of the demonstrators. In a difficult moment, a time when Americans can't decide whether to emphasize economic recovery or continued precautions against COVID-19, the nationwide rioting harms both hopes. Literally, thousands of already struggling businesses have been badly damaged, while assembling super spreader, densely packed crowds will only generate new spikes in the spread of the virus. No wonder most Americans love and value our police officers, without whom decent lives and livable cities could not exist. I'm Michael Medved.
This is a special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show on myths, mistakes, and lies about World War II. One of those myths says that war with Japan was absolutely inevitable, that Japan somehow wanted to attack the United States. That is simply not true. Japan wanted an empire in Asia, but they didn't feel the need to attack the United States or to drive us from Hawaii or even to drive us from the Philippines necessarily, especially given their economic involvement with the United States. What happened, however, was they needed oil. And when the United States began embargoing Japan because of their aggression against China and against Indochina, then Japan had not so many choices, because one of the places they needed to go for oil was the Dutch East Indies to some of the British possessions. That would have meant war against Holland, what was left of Holland. Holland itself had succumbed to the Nazis. And war against Britain, which would have meant war against the United States. The United States was the only substantial power in the Pacific that threatened this buildup of the Japanese Empire, which is why they had this idea that with Britain fighting the Nazis, with Holland paralyzed and conquered, France conquered, they could basically do what they wanted in Asia as long as they kept the Americans out and destroyed American power, and most American naval power was concentrated at a place called
Pearl Harbor. But one of the stories that needs to be told is that as late as November 20th of 1941, just a little bit more than 2 weeks before the Pearl Harbor attack, there was a peace offer that was made to Washington by Japan, and apparently it was a serious peace offer. The Japanese said they would remove all their troops from southern Indochina and move them into the north of Indochina if, in return, America sold 1 million tons of aviation fuel to the Japanese. That's what they needed. They needed the fuel. FDR heard the offer, and he thought it was good. He told Secretary of State Cordell Hull to take it seriously, and FDR wrote out in handwriting with pencil a draft reply to the Japanese, basically saying, okay, let's go forward and negotiate this. That was then shown to Churchill and to Chiang Kai-shek of China. They hated it. They didn't want to see it, and so it dropped by the wayside. But with that going on, the Japanese were preparing to fulfill Admiral Yamamoto's plan for a surprise attack at Pearl Harbor. The idea? They would take the American fleet out. They knew they couldn't conquer the United States. But the assumption was that they would build up so much power by then capturing the Philippines, capturing Singapore, maybe even capturing Australia, that the United States would basically sue for peace and recognize that they couldn't win, especially if Pearl Harbor were totally destroyed. Hence the surprise attack. Of course, what they weren't counting on was an energized and renewed America asserting its status as the greatest nation on God's green earth.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. As the nation struggles with our legacy of racism and inequality, many well-intentioned Americans embrace lies about white privilege, the idea that people of European ancestry enjoy vast advantages based solely on their ongoing oppression of all people of color. But many measures of well-being contradict this simplistic theory. Most recent numbers show white life expectancy declining, while Asian American people can expect to live a full 8 years longer, and Latino children will live on average 4 years longer than whites. Suicide in America claims twice as many lives as murder, and white people have the highest suicide rates, almost double those of black people. The largest number of crime victims, welfare recipients, drug deaths, and most other measures of misery are white. This doesn't mean black families don't suffer from intolerable race-based inequalities that must be overcome, but it's no solution to focus on purported white privilege that actually doesn't exist. I'm Michael Medved.
Hi, everyone. This is Fred Dreyer for Balance7.com. Do you have acid indigestion? You can't eat the foods you like? Your stomach is upset all the time? Chronic pain a problem? Then do yourself a favor and go to Balance7.com. Start living again and get rid of chronic pain. Balance 7 has all the natural ingredients that work to rid your body of inflammation. I take it every day to keep my inflammation and acid indigestion in check. Remember, a sick body is an acid body. So, get rid of your acid indigestion and inflammation with Balance7.com. Call 800-793-9039. That's 800-793-9039. 800-793-9039 or go to Balance7.com. That's Balance, the number 7.com.
Did you know that you could easily be saving up to 90% on your taxes by simply making a phone call? That's right. The Fortune 500, the globalists, all the big billionaires and millionaires, they know about the loopholes written into the law where most of them pay almost zero tax. In fact, many of them pay no tax. You even see it on the news. How are they able to do that? But the common person can. So whether you're a school teacher, a lawyer, a scientist, a millionaire, a billionaire, or whether you're just a regular blue-collar worker, everybody should learn about the legal, lawful loopholes. And we've got an organization and a group that I am so proud to be working with, American Tax Solutions. GCN has a special deal with them to get you the best rates. Here's the most important part. They save you money and then get part of the savings. This is an absolute win-win solution. You've got to give them a call at 855-907-4841 or GCNTaxCut.com. That's GCNTaxCut.com. The only way you miss out is not making the phone call. Make it now.